Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series four of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. Once again, Adam Walker is alongside me, so sit back, relax, and we'll take things from here. This week, Adam and I are joined by Mark Bradley. Mark is the founder and CEO at People With. Mark, welcome to the show. I guess you and I haven't spoken prior to this, and I don't know too much about People With. So if you could give us a quick overview as to, what the business is all about before we get into things, and then we'll talk about your background and things.
Yeah. First of all, thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to come into this. This is amazing to be asked into such a forum, and I'm very much appreciative of it. I did speak with Adam before. We had a very lengthy conversation. Obviously, James, this is the first time I'm meeting you, but I've watched a few of your podcasts and I like what you're doing. So I'm delighted to be a part of it. So let me introduce you to People With. So People With is about people with whatever condition, and it was born out of a will to actually help patients get better treatment outcomes.
Right.
And my background is nursing, so I started a nursing career in 1988, and I was a charge nurse in St Thomas's Hospital in London, specialized in hematology. Blood cancer, sickle cell anemia, and the likes, and other blood-related disorders.
Yeah.
I then moved back to Dublin and specialised in cardiothoracic intensive care, and I worked in intensive care for 3 or 4 years before moving into the life science industry, pharmaceutical industry, as a nurse advisor initially, and then I progressed my career in pharmaceuticals. But whilst I was a young nurse, I realized that people, albeit get the same diagnosis, they don't tend to present with the same symptoms. They don't present with the same biomarkers. Their vital signs are not at the same levels. But yet, if there's so many variables as into the presentation of a condition, why are we all being treated with the same treatments at the same dosages? And then, as a result of this, we're not sure if what treatment works best for what different profile of patient, what presentation of condition, and we don't know enough about this.
Yeah.
And we're now in a position in today's world with access to digital technologies, with access to better pathways of communication to enable patients to capture this information themselves. And that's what People With is about. It's about empowering the patient to effectively track and monitor their health simply so that they can have better communications and conversations with their doctors as into the values of their treatments.
Interesting. And I guess touching back for what you said a couple of moments ago about, I guess, people with whatever that disease or symptom might be, it can differ from one person to the next, but they all get treated the same. I guess from your experience from the nursing world, is there, to me, that doesn't seem to make sense. Is it a case of it's just always been done that way? Why is that the case, do you think?
Well, in the majority, the reason why it is that way is because treatment pathways are defined within different locations. So your pathway is a first-line product. If that doesn't work, you move to a second-line product. If that doesn't work, you move to a third-line product.
Yeah.
Maybe go to a second dose of a different escalation. There's different polypharmacy and so on and so forth. But everybody's taken up the same pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that leads to an increase in burden on healthcare provision, because patients then have to continually come back to their doctor to find out, well, is that working? Is it not working? Here, we'll give this a go, James, and sure, call back to me in 3 or 4 weeks if it isn't having an effect.
Yeah.
So that leads to a saturation of services to the point then that people can't get into service mm-hmm. when they need to get into service. So if you're looking to be seen, you're nearly put onto a waiting list to go through a process to determine when you're going to get an intervention applied, which could be 2 years down the line. And the majority of appointments could be removed if there was more data transparency, and that's what this is about.
Right. Okay, I was going to just thinking, I mean, not to mention how frustrating that is for patients of going back, try this, go back, try this. So in terms of people with then coming in from a different angle on the data side, how does this work? Is it something that is to do with wearables and collecting data? Is it analyzing the data? Where does, I guess, the service that you're providing come in?
Well, we provide this resource on the App Store if you have an iOS device, or right. on Google Play. It's on an Android version in Google Play.
Uh-huh.
So this is free for all patients to use. So anybody who wants to track their health and monitor their health can do so.
Yeah.
But whenever you go to a doctor or a nurse or a healthcare provider, you're going because something is happening. So that generally is a feeling of unwell, and that unwell presents in symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the symptoms then lead to maybe an awareness of biomarkers. So they will take blood tests, or they'll do different diagnostic investigations to find out if your biomarkers are actually out with a normal range. And the other measure that they use would be vital signs. And they also can use surrogate biomarkers like different assessment scales to determine whether you're impaired in a particular manner, which leads to a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you are taking a treatment, if you're presenting with symptoms or your vital signs are not within a normal range, then if the treatment's effective, surely the vital signs should be coming back into a normal range, mm-hmm. and or your symptoms should be improving. Well, I don't need to go into a doctor to find out that my nausea is gone, or my nausea is still there, or my headache's gone, or my headache's still there, or I'm suffering from diarrhea, or I'm not suffering from diarrhea. So if you're, for example, if you're suffering from Crohn's or colitis, there's obviously going to be biomarkers there with respect to inflammatory biomarkers, but the things that you're going to be looking out for is how often are you going to the toilet?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that tends to be a reflection. So if you're taking a medication and you're still going to the toilet the same amount of times, well, then is the medication having the effect or not?
Yeah.
More significantly, if it is having the effect and your symptoms are now controlled, why are you going back to the doctor to tell him that you're now controlled? Because that's taking up a slot. And what we're saying is that there was more data transparency, and patients, they are the sole owner of the data. Do you know what I mean? So for example, like if I see a doctor today and I don't see the doctor for 2 years, what is happening with my health? Is it a straight line? Is it, oh, he was here the last time and now he's here?
Mm.
And what happened in the last 2 year period is nearly indicative of whether your health's improving or progressing or deteriorating. But what we do as an industry of health is that we look at single data points at very disparate times. Do you know what I mean? And they tend to be the data points whenever somebody's sick, because you don't see the doctor when you're well. So the doctor, there's no indication of when somebody is getting a good or a bad intervention with a treatment. And what we are saying is that by putting something into the hands of the patient, mm-hmm. what you're effectively able to do is you're able to create a consistency, a uniformity. You're creating a deeper accuracy on the outcome that's been generated from treatment plans.
Yeah.
But the treatment plan that might be effective for me, for my age, for my profile being my age, my race, my ethnicity, my gender, my comorbid conditions, concomitant medications, nobody's capturing that level of detail and then being able to reference that to 100,000 people that have the exact same profile to see what treatment plan is most effective for what symptom presentation, for what biomarker irregularity, mm-hmm. for what vital sign irregularities.
So Mark, if I can just follow on from that. So do I understand it then that your expectation is for the patient to complete their data acquisition through a People With app that is maintained on an ongoing basis that gives you that indicator to wellness? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so it gives you an indicator. So what it does, so if I have a symptom today, I can capture my symptom and the intensity of that symptom. And then tomorrow, what is that symptom? Is it better than what it was yesterday or is it worse? So it's been able to progressively measure a symptom. That's one example. Or vital signs, for example. If I have hypertension and I'm asymptomatic, how do I know my blood pressure is actually being controlled by a treatment unless I go into the doctor to get a blood pressure taken, which is an irregular environment for me? Do you know what I mean? So I'm a wee bit more stressed. Mm-hmm. So my blood pressure is still high. So that's indicative of the fact that, oh, that treatment may not be working. But in actual fact, in your home environment, your blood pressure may be controlled. And with the access to so many wearables and home devices are becoming more and more affordable, and a lot of homes are having these devices now, there's a need, in my opinion, for people to be able to consolidate all of that data on a single platform, and People With is that platform. So you can bring in integrated data. You can take data from your health kit on your iPhone. You can take data from your iWatch. You can transfer data from Fitbits, Garmins, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And then you can create a single report. So you've got a uniformity of data, despite the fact that it's coming from multiple devices. And then you've got this facility to interpret it yourself as a patient. So it encourages you, it motivates you to continue doing the right things because you can see the values. Or more significantly, you can share it with your doctor. And then there's an ease of interpretation with that for the doctor as well.
Fine. So it seems that it would make the doctor's life a lot easier in order to kind of diagnose where you are at that present time, where you've been with your health, and what treatment is going to be most effective. I guess without trying to go too deep, as if I'm on Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, isn't it fair to say that most people do only tend to track when there is a problem? Like, I know I'm guilty of it. I mean, I try and avoid going to the doctor's hospital or whatever, unless I really have to. So I guess, I think like a lot of things that we talk about on the show, Adam, it's sometimes adoption, isn't it? And getting people to use these things. So what struggles have you had with that, or how have you overcome that side of things, Mark? If they exist in your world, I guess.
Right. So what we are seeing, what we have done to overcome these struggles is we've worked very closely with patients. Mm-hmm. So every time that we have somebody that comes onto our device,
yeah,
we have over 9,000 people now that have done that, have found this themselves. And we haven't really launched this technology because we've only got to a no crash status over the last 6 months, which enables us now to move forward with this technology.
Mm.
But what we are seeing is people use this as they need to use it. So some people might use it for medication scheduling and medication reminding.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just to improve their adherence to a medication, and that they may just use it for that because they may not have any symptoms and they may not have any vital signs that they can measure or are required to measure. They may add in supplements and they may look to see, well, how do these supplements affect me? Are they making me better? Are they not making me better? So on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So there's different elements that you can use it for, but you only use it for when you need it. And go back to your point, James. Yeah, you only actually track when you need to track. But whenever your symptom goes back to zero, it's not there. You don't have to track it then because it's at zero. But the next time that you get a symptom, you can effectively then just go in and reactivate that old symptom. Mm-hmm. So whenever you go to a doctor in 2 years' time, James, if you haven't been to a doctor and the doctor says, well, James, how are you? Well, effectively, all you're presenting is what happened in the last 3 days.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of relevance in what has happened in the previous 2 years, because these things could be happening 3 or 4 times previous and you didn't bother going to the doctor. Mm. But give that evidence to actually highlight to the doctor, do you know what, this isn't just a one-off. This is why it happened 4 times, and this is when it happens.
Okay, fine.
So it gives clarity to the doctor, as in, do you know what? What am I treating here?
Mm.
Mark, as you're describing that, I'm just wondering about the cost burden, but also reminded me of, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, there were a couple of apps that came out. There was the COVID Zoe app, where people track their symptoms and their food and their intakes. And people got very used to doing that, didn't they? Because they felt they were doing it for the greater good. And I think millions of people actually signed up to that app, including myself. But then there came a point at which people stopped using it because they then became so paranoid and anxious about the other aspects of interacting with people that the adoption then started to reduce over time, as, you know, relative to the vaccination uptake and relative to various lockdown rules. I'm just curious how that sits analogous to that kind of example.
Yeah, so we have quite a few populations of patients with different conditions at the minute. And whenever somebody comes on to this, as it's a shiny new toy, you play with it every day. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But effectively what you get after about maybe 3 or 4 weeks of usage is they're actually only using it for what they need to track. So you're getting a more accurate reflection, and then it becomes less invasive. All right, that's the first thing I'll say. Second thing I'll say is we give a lot of support. There's a lot of support materials on this device as well. So health literacy, product literacy. So if somebody's taking a medication and they need to find out something about that medication, they can effectively find the information through the device because they're taking that treatment. Or alternatively, if they want information on their health condition. And we actually see a lot of people engaging with the actual literature in addition to when they're tracking symptoms and so on and so forth. But people need to be knowing where to go to find information, because there's a lot of information that's not real and there's misinformation. So we ensure that a lot of the information that's been presented through the technology is actually coming from good sources of data and good informed sources. We also present the data in multiple formats because people have different health literacy. People have different preferences as to how they want to access data. Going back to your initial point, Adam, which is the usage. A good measure of product market fit is, especially when it comes to digital health, they measure it on monthly active usage and daily active usage. And they use this as a ratio. And the solid fit in a product market fit is greater than 25%. And people with this currently sitting at 53.9%.
Wow.
So it's indicative of the values that the patient is seeing from the technology currently. Mm-hmm. And that will scale as we scale additional functionality. The other assurance, we don't touch any personally identifiable data. The only thing that we can actually access is consolidated data sets. And all of the data, personally identifiable data, is encrypted and in flight and in rest. So no, we can't access it. There is one individual within the business can access it, but they can only access it with the consent of the patient through the data privacy process that's implemented within the business.
Okay. Well, that gives me a bit of an understanding as to, yeah, how it works, what you're doing, and I guess kind of where the idea came from, given your background in nursing and kind of seeing these things happen firsthand. At what point, Mark, was it that you thought, you know what, I'm actually going to press the button on this and launch the business? Because a lot of people have ideas, particularly for apps these days, but nothing ever happens. They think to themselves, yeah, I'd like to do that, but they don't know what is involved in actually getting it off the ground. So when, you know, at what point was that? And, you know, how long ago was that? Because it sounds like 9,000 users, if I'm correct at the moment. You've had some, you know, certainly a reasonable uptake already. So what point did you press the go button on this? What made you do that?
So there's a couple of reasons why we did this. First of all, from my business, over the last 20 years working in the pharmaceutical industry and the promotion of brands, I was always being asked by the doctors when I was promoting a brand, will this work for this type of patient?
Right.
And every single day I was getting a phone call from a doctor who was a customer of mine and going, Mark, I have a patient coming in to me. They have been started on this treatment. It didn't work. We've tried this treatment. It didn't work. Will your treatment work?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't say whether it would or not. And the reason being is because the R&D process, the research and development process for medications, there's very stringent inclusion and exclusion criteria.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very defined population of patients that are included in trials, but there's no generalizability to the patient that's in the trial and the patient that's in the clinical environment.
Right.
So how do we capture the evidence to support these doctors to make decisions for patients who don't meet the criteria of the patient that's included in the clinical trial? So the only way to do that is to better understand the outcomes that are being generated for diverse populations of patients and then consolidating that evidence so that we can build out a real-world data structure direct from patients to truly inform the values of treatments. So that's what it is. Now, what led me to push on with this, I had an uncle that was diagnosed with a condition, thrombocytopenia, and he was 77 years of age at that point of diagnosis. And as my background was in health, I was invited into his care, James and Adam, and a decision had to be made as into what treatment he was going to take. So we were sitting with the doctor, and the doctor said, Michael, this is what we're going to offer you. And I says, well, what are you expecting as an outcome here, doctor? And I told him my background. I told him I was a nurse. I told him I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. I wasn't trying to hide anything. Yeah. I says, look, what is the expected outcome? And he says, well, this treatment's quite good, Mark. There's 1 in 4 people go into remission. And I says, 25% of patients with this condition who get this treatment go into remission. That's incredible. That's massive numbers. Like.
Mm.
And 2 out of 4, Mark, they don't go into remission, but they get a stabilization of their thrombocytopenia, but they have to stay on treatment for life. And 1 out of 4, it just doesn't work. So I referred them numbers back to him as percentages. That's 75% of patients with thrombocytopenia, you either stop the deterioration of the condition or you bring them into remission with this treatment.
Mm.
I says, where are these numbers from? And he says, oh, research. And I says, yeah, I know, but what paper? Like, and what was the population of patients?
Mm.
And he looked up the paper in front of me and he went 25 to 40-year-old males. And I says, but Mickey's 77. Like.
Right, yeah.
I says, so in your experience, what do we give 77-year-old males with thrombocytopenia and what is the most effective treatment for this population of patients? And wow. He says, well, it hasn't been researched. And I says, well, there you go. And then I thought, well, Michael took the treatment, passed away 6 months later.
Wow.
And it wasn't very pleasant his last 6 months. He was constantly in and out of hospital, very sick with the treatment.
Wow.
Maybe more so than the condition, but between the both of them, it took his life.
Mm.
And he was happy that he had made that decision because it was a choice he had to make. But the point I made after that to the doctor was, is there anywhere where this can be kept? Is there anywhere where this information can be consolidated with other 77-year-olds and so on and so forth? And there's not. There's not. Wow. So we look at electronic health records to determine the future. We look at electronic health records, but the electronic health record is a record of when the patient was seen in a clinical environment. So unless they're seen every day, you're not actually seeing what's happening.
Mm.
And I think similarly to that, you know, general electronic health records, certainly in the UK, like CPRD, they're retrospective, aren't they? And they're too little, too late. They're not generalized. They are in pockets of information in different data sets, and they're not easily accessible to a wider population. And they tend to be managed by exception. And I think that's to your point, isn't it?
Yes, but let's let our imagination run wild a little here. Right. So say every patient over the age of 70 with thrombocytopenia had have tracked and monitored the outcome of their condition with the treatments that they were offered for the last 5 years.
Mm.
How much would we learn about what treatment is going to do for what presentation of a condition for what profile of patient? Like, what works for a Spanish population, an Indian population? If you look at clinical trials, the majority of clinical trials are made up of white Caucasians. We don't even make up the largest population in the world. If you think about it, like if you look at the population of China, if you look at the population of India, and they're above the billion. Do you know what I mean? We don't, you know, we are a large population, white Caucasian, but in the majority, the population that's researched are male. There's a lot of exclusion of females. And, you know, yet whenever we bring treatments out into the world, what we effectively do is we give that treatment to everybody.
One size fits all, but clearly one size does not fit all. And that's where, yeah, you've spotted this as a huge issue. I think a lot of people talk about it regularly, but you've gone out there after, yeah, pretty awful personal situation and done something about it. So look, hats off to you with that, you know, actually doing that. Well, I mean, you've now got me thinking about the business side of things. Where did you go from there? So you recognize this problem of not having that data, and, you know, thought to yourself, well, if we did have, say, 5 years of data of people in their 70s to, you know, taking this particular medication, could have been. Is that where immediately did you think app? Immediately did you think where to get this? Where, what did the business look like in the early days? Was it just yourself? Did you have a team? Where would you go with that thought process is what I'm thinking.
Right. So we started off with a company called Visibility, which was based around the visible strategies to support pharmaceutical companies to commercialize brands. And, right. And that's where my expertise lay whenever I was working in the pharmaceutical industry. And I noticed a gap in capabilities of teams being able to go out and find out how to the sweet spot for the positioning of their brand in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know enough about their customer. They didn't know enough about the challenges that they overcome. They didn't know enough about what influence they're prescribing. And we built this process of what I call conversation generated intelligence, which was built into a technology called XLens under the banner of visible strategy or visibility.
Yeah.
We generated a revenue from that business, and we had scheduled. We had a good income from that business after year one. In year two, we had about maybe £1 million worth of business that was pre-contracted, which was set to go live in 2020.
Right. I was just about to ask, when was this? Are we talking pre-COVID? How far pre-COVID? So you've now put a timestamp on it, right? Yeah.
So in 2020... what happened was none of the contracts took place. So we lost all of that business. And the contract that we had in situ, whenever they come to a natural license term end, they were discontinued where they should have been continuing. And the reason being is because the company needed people on the ground and seeing doctors. and COVID locked down the hospitals
mm-hmm.
and locked down the opportunity. So we had wow. some revenue from that business. We had a team of developers from that business. We just positioned them, pivoted them over into the second arm of the business, which is what we were going to do anyway.
Mm.
We had the design all specced out with the specification. We had everything done and dusted with respect to moving in that product, and we just fast-tracked that development. And within about 8 months, we had the product wow. as a beta product in the App Store as a first iteration. Now, wow. we've been through multiple iterations since, and we still have the same team. But where we could not go into the market with this product until we got to what's called a no-crash data. So it had to be a robust technology. It had to be able to stand on its own 2 feet.
What does that mean for someone who doesn't understand this sort of thing? Myself, for example, what is no crash data? What does that mean?
No crash data means, right, so I'm on the technology and I'm capturing information on it and it's doing what it should do and it's not crashing out. So it's not doing things wrongly, it's doing things rightly, or it's not just, you've ever been in an app where it just bang closes?
All of them.
Yeah, well, we have got to a no crash status, which means that we're not falling out.
I need that app.
We're not falling out. So, and we're capturing information consistently, uniformly.
Yeah.
We've also built in the coding structure that fits in with the National Health Service, which fits in with the American system, which sits in with other health systems as well. And then we've released it in 174 countries wow. as an English version. All right. So that's
incredible. So look, in hindsight then, as much as probably at the time you were thinking, oh shit, do you think that the whole getting one side of the business shut down and forcing you to put all your eggs in the other basket and push on with that has sped things up?
I would say not, because we were generating revenue in that business and our plan was always to develop that team across on this other side, because there's three main stakeholders in health, which is the patient, the healthcare provider, and the life science industry.
Yeah.
Because the life science industry being medical devices or medications or whatever the case may be. They're your three main stakeholders. We were effectively building a company or a business which was creating data transparency across the three stakeholders.
Right, I get you.
So we would have generated revenue through visibility, which was going to enable us then, which was always, our roadmap was always to do that. It just so happened now with the change in the market environment now with respect to hospitals, with respect to doctors being under pressure, with respect to lack of access for industry into hospitals, that whole environment now has changed. And as such, we're going to have to change our X-Lens technology in order to fit that new market environment, of which we're doing research on that currently. So I'm not saying it was a godsend. It wasn't, because
I guess if you've got something that is revenue generating and you've got the plan in place, it's kind of like, well, I was going to go there anyway. But
the problem is we've now done it without money. When in actual fact, we would have had money to do it with our original plan.
Yeah. So
our revenue stream kind of dried up, which meant then that we had to take an investment where we were moving away from an organic growth model to an investment model. So we took in seed money in order to support the development to get it to where it is currently.
Yeah.
And now we've got a true positioning for our brand in the market. So from a patient perspective, this is for absolutely anyone. So, and what we mean by anyone, it doesn't matter what your condition is or your conditions. You could have more than one condition. But if you want to become engaged and activated in your health and you have two conditions, in the majority, you'd have to download two different apps. If them two different apps for them two different conditions don't capture all of the information that you need, you might have to download something else. What People With is all about is simplicity. It's about improving the capabilities of the technology to enable all patients to become empowered in the activation and engagement in their own health. So if you have two conditions, it doesn't matter. Vital signs are vital signs are vital signs. It doesn't matter. Your blood pressure is not going to be any different as a measurement if you're suffering from arthritis or if you're suffering from a cardiac problem. It's still blood pressure. Mm. If your symptom is still your symptom. Your biomarker is still your biomarker. Your medication scheduling is still medication scheduling. What we have done is we have created a process for these patients, especially those with comorbid conditions, to be able to see the impact of a change of treatment on one condition and how it affects their symptomology in another condition on a single application. Wow. And it's in simple terms.
Pretty impressive stuff. And you mentioned a second ago, I think I heard you say 174 countries that this is now active in, if correct. But look, give us a snapshot. So that's how things were formed. That's how it kind of looked at the beginning, how you had to navigate COVID. Give us a snapshot of how things look at present in terms of the business, how it's going, you know, patient numbers enrolled with the app, etc.
Right. So we're currently pre-revenue and we're moving into we're in a commercial implementation or commercial strategy. That's one of the main focuses of the business now is commercialization. And how we intend to commercialize this is by speaking with stakeholders who wish to actually see data. All right. So the stakeholder being obviously the patient gets this for nothing. So you can commercialize this through those other stakeholders who wish to access this information.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, we can introduce this to health providers and give them the opportunity to see how their patients are progressing in real time.
Yeah.
Which enables them to triage them patients into service. So there's a patient group over here. They're getting good control of their symptoms, their biomarkers or their vital signs are all within a normal level. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see them every 6 months. I can bring them in a year's time.
Yeah.
Those people who aren't being controlled, you need to see them more often. So it's a matter of, so from that commercial aspect, we can go in and work with a healthcare provider to enable them to access information directly from their patients to make better informed decisions as into the operations, the resources that they need to allocate.
Yeah. What would that mean, Mark, when you crack that nut? You know, once you've done that and you know you are actively working with these healthcare providers, what's that going to mean to yourself and the business kind of on a personal level? Because if that's what you've been working towards, speaking about, you know, Michael and identifying a problem to then getting it to that point, what will that mean to you personally?
So it's the vision, you've got to understand what my vision is, James. My vision is that we are building population health data sets to enable us to inform better treatments for all diverse populations.
Mm-hmm.
And diverse presentations. I'm about the patient. So what it means to me is that patients are getting managed better. Patients that need to be seen are being seen. Patients that don't need to be seen are not being seen
mm-hmm.
as regularly. All right. So if you can create an efficiency as into the management of the resource that manages health within a country, for example, the National Health Service, if you can create an efficiency there so we can improve the health population, we'll be doing a significant job.
Yeah.
And I will. I would like to think that I would have some influence in that by enabling more and more people to share their health and understand health progression. Like, you've got to understand, like, there's, I think it's 16 million patients in the UK are suffering from a chronic illness. And a chronic illness is defined as an illness that lasts longer and is sustained in nature. You know, that's progressive in nature. Arthritis, mm-hmm. Crohn's, colitis, you know, these are all chronic illnesses. But everybody's moving along the same pathway on this condition severity. If you think about this, so your arthritis is progressively getting worse. So if I think to all of those patients that are coming behind me on this same journey, what if I captured my health progression today and everybody captured their health progression? So those people coming behind are effectively going to be better informed as into the better way to treat the condition. Yeah. More significantly, if I'm at a level and there's people in front of me, if those people in front of me are doing it, whenever I move and progress with my condition, there's going to be a mountain of information that's going to inform how I'm going to be treated. So it's like I'm giving, but I'm also receiving.
Yeah, no, I like it. It all makes sense. And look, in terms of, you know, that's kind of the roadmap as to where things are likely to go. In terms of perhaps what you've learned about yourself, Mark, throughout this journey, in terms of having to
probably only had half an hour
overcome these hurdles, what would you say probably that the biggest one would have been?
The biggest hurdle, it depends where you're coming from, that, James, because hurdles are hurdles are hurdles, and there's different hurdles for different parts of your life and
so on.
Let's
change that one then. What is it about your own mentality that has allowed you to overcome each of the hurdles?
I suppose I'm a great believer in your health is your wealth, all right? And if I come to a point of struggle, James, and there is points of struggle, don't get me wrong, this is not easy sailing, and it's a very tough journey, and anybody that's considering getting into business, you know, don't be disillusioned by the fact that you're your own boss and all the rest. You are your own boss, but you really aren't, because if you have employees, you're effectively accountable and responsible for everything that works within the business, and the burden can be high. One thing that I do every morning whenever I get up, if I am getting up with a negative or an overwhelming or a pressure point, I start thinking about people that I've looked after in the past. I look to people, friends that I know that have worse challenges than I have. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, you can but do your best. And every morning, if you get up and you put yourself into the right mindset and the right frame of mind, and you maintain a focus and break everything down into bite-sized chunks, I'm a great believer in, I can only do the next thing. There's no point in looking away in advance. I always work backwards as well. So if I have a point in the future that I need to be at, I will look to that point and I will step it backwards, right? So in order for that to happen, this needs to happen. In order for that to happen, this needs to happen. And I will take that back to now, where I am now. And I will just focus on that next step. I will not focus on that end point. You can only do what you can do today.
Definitely. Big in agreement with that. And small manageable tasks makes sometimes climbing a mountain can be like manageable, right? I guess. So I'm with you on that. And in terms of the business, plans for the future, expansions, etc., where are you looking to be in say a couple of years' time? You know, what are the plans for the business in terms of expansion and other avenues? Is there another business that is tucked away somewhere that this is going to fund? Is there any more ideas in the pipeline?
There's loads of ideas, but look, I'm not going to go through the ideas, but what I will say to you is what my plan is as follows, right? There's so many inefficiencies within the management of medications from an R&D environment and the management of medications in the prescribing environment, the commercial environment, let's call it. And what I want to do in the next couple of years is I want to position the business as a provider of data with provenance that's actually going to lead to efficiencies in R&D and also efficiencies in commercialization of brands.
I like it. Well, look, we'll cap things off there in terms of the main show. But before we let you go, Mark, we always like to finish up the Huxley Morton podcast with a quick fire questions round. So we'll ask you to try and keep things short, concise. And we'll split these between us, but I'll kick off with the first one. And that is, you know, what is the one piece of advice that you wish that you had as your younger self?
Suppose the first piece of advice I would give to anybody is, if you have an idea and you believe in that idea, don't rest on your laurels. Do something to make it happen. Do something rather than just come back with it in 10 years and go, do you know what I should have done, or I could have done, or whatever the case may be. This idea that I had, which was that people with idea, that come to light in 1988.
Wow.
Whenever I started nursing, I could see the differences in patients. I could see the values of different treatments for different profiles, for different presentations of conditions. But I sat on it until 2020. Do you know what I mean? So that's one thing. And even through my career in the pharmaceutical industry, I could see, I was always thinking, do you know what? We need to know more about our patients. We need to know more about our patients. We need to know more about our patients. So
like it.
Get it. Get your idea.
Don't wait. Get just your get, idea get going, right?
And go and do something about it. And make it happen.
Like it. Like that a lot. Adam, that over sounds, to you, my man.
That sounds like the power of now. In other words, don't hesitate. Just get on and do it. I think it's great advice. Our audience always like to know what our interviewees are reading, or the resource that they have as their go-to. What would yours be, Mark?
Well, I have a book that I leave beside my bed, and I refer to this book nearly every day, to be honest with you. Wow. And I just open this book, and how I read this book initially, I just read the book from cover to cover, got a little bit out of it, but now I just go to this book and I just open that book as into whatever page. I open it, twist it round, I turn it round, and then I open it. Do you know what I mean? I have my eyes closed to see where it's going to open, all right? Mm. I don't know whether I'm at the top of the book or the bottom of the book, and then I read that part of the book, and I get so much from it every time. And it's called The Power of the Subconscious Mind by Joseph Murphy, right? That's a book that I just refer to that book quite a bit, and I get mm-hmm. a lot of help from that book, from my own thinking and so on and so forth. That's first and foremost. Second book that I would promote for anybody if they're thinking about getting into business is Will It Make the Boat Go Faster? And it's really to focus your thinking as into what needs to be done rather than what you're doing. So it prioritizes, it gives you real focus. And if it ain't going to make the boat go faster, well, you really shouldn't be doing it, if the truth be told. If you can't see the value of what it is that you're doing, move to the job that's going to make the boat go faster.
I like that. I often refer to that as doing what's hard and necessary rather than what's fun and easy, because everyone likes to do what's fun and easy, but nine times out of 10, that ain't what you need to be doing.
or eat the frog. It's start with eating the frog, isn't it? It's the same principle.
Same thing.
We all know a lot of people who actually look busy. Are they busy?
Yeah, precisely. Cool. Well, I guess my next question, you know, I'm always interested from a recruiting standpoint, running a recruiting business, and that is how people kind of put together their teams. So look, what would you say are the top three qualities that you value most and have value most when building the business, building teams in the past?
First and foremost for me is passion. And what I like to see, I never interview in here. I actually sit and watch the interviews. And I just want to see passion. I want to see a passion about something, whether that's a sport, whether that's a good family member, whether that, whatever it is. And if I can see passion, I can make something happen out of that. Like I have two people in particular in this business that I have employed, and I employed them in passion, and they're both of them are replaceable.
Incredible stuff. And any other qualities? So you give them passion is sounds like that you could potentially put that as 1, 2, and 3. But if I pushed you for 2 more.
Well, work ethic. So that's a big thing for me. So, you know, I'm not a great believer in this 9-to-5 stuff. Like I'm in the office at maybe 7 o'clock in the morning, could be up at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, so has everybody got a work ethic so that whenever they're over, and I'm ownership is another thing. So I want somebody to own, like I'm not anybody's boss. You own your own work. You're responsible for your own stuff. Do you know what I mean? So their capacity to own something and own it, and also their work ethic. So whenever if they are presented with a challenge, how do they get over that challenge? If I see a challenge, I will never go to help somebody with a challenge. First and foremost, if they don't ask me, but secondly, so that I can learn.
Yeah.
I want to learn about them. I want to see how they overcome challenges.
All of those three go very hand in hand. So I pushed you on them, but yeah, I mean, they're almost identical. I like that. very good. Very good.
What is your favorite thing outside of work? You've talked a lot about work today, Mark. It's always interesting to hear what makes people tick. What makes you tick?
I like socializing and I like meeting friends. And I'm a massive fan of Irish football, Gaelic football. I don't know if you're aware of Irish football, but it's a very community-based, that's the hurling aspect, I guess. So it's a very community-based sport. And it engages everybody. Everybody can partake if you're... You know, it doesn't matter what your ability is. If you're not a great footballer or a great hurler, you can still be very much involved in a club and bring more value to the club apart from being a player. Do you know what I mean? So, and I love that. And I love the community aspect of it. That's first, well, not first and foremost, that's secondary. Second, first would be family. Family's big to me. Do you know what I mean? So, my parents, my own family, my wife and her parents and her siblings, everybody. I just am a great believer in that family network and building that family into a strong unit. I love that.
Cool.
You're in good company. Let me tell you.
Good stuff.
Well, I probably could guess the answer to the next one then, bearing in mind what you've just outlined with the last couple of answers. But look, to close the show in terms of the quick fire question round, what would you say is your number one golden rule for life and business, Mark?
Golden rule for life and business is make decisions fast.
Cool. I like that, it.
I can't have slow decisions. I'd rather go to somebody and say, make this a fast no, mate, or, you know.
I'm all for that, exactly. Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the show. For anyone, I guess, looking to reach out to you, find out more about people with, about yourself, about the businesses in general, what is the best way to find out about you or contact you and the team?
Well, the best way to get me is through email mark.bradley@peoplewith.com. And we are looking to work with more and more pharma companies, and we're looking for people with innovation within these companies, people who want to do things differently, people who want to do things better. So if it's coming to patient recruitment for clinical trials, if it's coming to patient support, if it's coming to understanding your patient better, as into their experiences, as into the outcomes that your brand is generating, we can support companies do that better. So this would be a call out to pharmaceutical leadership who are looking to do things better to create efficiencies beyond what they're currently experiences and looking to overcome challenges in their roles.
Perfect stuff. Well, look, we'll certainly get you tagged up when the show goes out, Mark. But yeah, for now, gents, I just want to say thank you very much for joining me on the show. No doubt we will continue to follow the story from here on in. Thanks again.
I look forward to it.
Thanks, Mark.